Paul Hegarty is a lecturer in philosophy and visual culture at University College Cork in Cork, Ireland. Hegarty's also the author of Noise Music, A History, where he makes the case that the Japanese are central to the history of noise music. Hegarty told Steve Paulson about his introduction to Japanese noise music.
In Nottingham in the UK in 93, I'd say, and I look at this beautiful album called Anti-Monument by Merzbow in a cardboard, very long cover with stuck-on pictures of planes and things falling apart.
Merzbow is a Japanese noise musician.
Right, it's the working name for a guy called Masami Akita. And I got that home, and it was just banging and clattering and noises. This is good. Are you allowed to do this? So at a personal level, it was my way in to another level of strange music, way beyond the kind of industrial music that was then in vogue, like Ministry and Nine Inch Nails and so on. Then it turned out there's tons of this stuff out there, and the 90s saw a huge explosion. So I'm going to work backwards. I'm going to start with the 90s. The 90s is when it really became a sort of pure thing, where Merzbow gets louder and louder. The rock bands like KG Hinose, Fushitsusha, bands like The Ruins start in the 90s. And there's this drive, kind of like a arms race towards extreme volume and extreme content at the same time. Prior to this, we can go back as far as the early 70s to kind of the arrival of free jazz, prog rock, I suppose those are the main ones into Japan, and heavy metal, right. So Merzbow's favourite music is Black Sabbath and King Crimson, for example, and a lot of jazz. So what they were doing, and a lot of the musicians would kind of say this, is that for them, they didn't divide this music up into different genres. They were reading it as a different type of information. A problem is often raised of those of us writing about music in the West that we're somehow reductive of another culture, in this case Japan, and maybe it's not all noise to them. And that's possibly true. But a certain level of reduction is not possible to avoid, and the Japanese musicians in the 70s and through the 80s were processing whole swathes of new Western music, very occasionally combining it with Japanese traditional music, but very occasionally, and sort of producing this sort of, well, why don't we just have more of this? Why don't we make the tracks longer? So Acid Mother's Temple, who do a lot of touring in Europe, so they turn up here at least once a year, they basically sound like Hawkwind, but they're a lot louder. Every song is 25, 30 minutes or 25, 30 seconds long. So that would be a kind of typical strategy. They're not the noisiest, they're just rock music, really. But that's the kind of thing that was happening in the 80s, was taking every kind of genre and mixing them together, or perhaps stretching them.
Well, and then Merzbow does some rather interesting things. I mean, for instance, in some of his pieces, he incorporates nature recordings into his music. I'm thinking, for instance, of the song Black Frog. What do you think he's trying to do there?
Well, I'm always trying to work out whether he has or hasn't incorporated them. There's a Seals album, which I'm pretty sure has Seal sounds in. There's a very good album that's come out at the end of last year called Dolphin Sonar. Well, for him personally, the bizarre thing for this music, which is essentially just kind of all the way through, is that he thinks this is political. So how is he doing that? That's the real curiosity to me. So in Dolphin Sonar, or the Frog one that you mentioned, the Seals album, there's other ones about other sea wildlife. Just to have them in the titles and to get people thinking, I think the noise music creates a space for people to reflect on that without directing the way in which you think. Now, sometimes on the cover it will say, this is how to get in touch with PETA or organisations against whaling or this kind of thing. So there is that side of it. But for example, on Dolphin Sonar, which I presume is about dolphins being misled by too much shipping going on, it's about them being caught in nets in tuna fishing, but it's also about the possibility of them having their own system of sonar. Well, if you listen to the actual music, it's hard to tell whether this is supposed to depict the terrible time dolphins are having, or is this the beauty of nature? So firstly, you get this space to think about that. Then you're trying to read for content. You're saying, well, what's he saying about the frogs? What's he saying about the dolphins? Well, we don't really quite know what the answer is there. But overall, you get this nice, pleasing effect, I think, of awareness of the kind of random and incredible, exuberant creativeness of nature. So you get a very positive image of nature, I think, out of the sort of endless chaos that he's happy to put in front of us.
Because I would think that almost by definition, we would say that nature itself cannot create noise. Noise is something that only humans can create. Would you say that's true?
Largely, although my cat George might disagree. He was very helpful. I don't think I referred to him in the book in the end. Maybe I did. I was listening to an album by a female Japanese performer, Sachiko M, which is basically sine waves and silence. And, you know, George can listen to anything. He's been brought up in a noise environment. And I was sort of taking notes and going, oh, there's another silence. How long is that silence? And he was going mental. Aha! Thank you, George. It's not silent. It's only silent to me. So he would slightly disagree. Largely, though, yes, noise is some kind of judgment. So you need a system of meaning. You need systems of language with which to compare the thing you're calling noise. But I would think, pushing it slightly, but in a way consistent with Mertzbo, I would think that any animal that has worked out a system of sound processing has things it regards as noise, and noise would be the threatening things, like a hunting animal or something.
Mm-hmm. It was part of Mertzbo's project to subvert our ideas of what music is. Is he creating an anti-music, but yet somehow it's connected to music as well?
Yeah. Right, okay, I'll go on. Tempted to, that was basically the answer with a question mark on is what you gave me there. I think initially he was much more interested in that. It is an anti-music in the same way that the Dadaist Hans Richter wrote his book about Dada and called it Art and Anti-Art, and had the idea of anti-art as being something very positive, something that was a bit like art that happened where art was happening, but was actually an attack on our ideas on art. So in Mertzbo is doing that, for sure. But I think increasingly as he's gone on, it feels to me as a, for him, for the audience that is now used to this being out there, and for me as well, like wherever you want to place this, it's more a case of a parallel universe. Like this is a different world where music started out differently, where it didn't have the conventions. So I'm increasingly thinking in those terms of parallel sound universes, parallel ways of constructing meaning, which brings us back to the first thing you were saying about, you know, some people think free jazz is structured and others wouldn't, for example.
And Mertzbo has been called the most important artist in noise music. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, this is another yes moment. He's untouchable, I think, will be for a long time because of the volume, that's sort of a pun, I suppose, tragically, the volume of stuff that he brings out, which is, it's really hard to keep track of. It's well over 200, maybe it's 250 releases. He's doing 13 for one label this year. Important records, I think that is. So you still get, I have many, I don't know how many albums I have of his, but there is still a kind of, the threateningness has gone away, but you're still not quite sure what to get, even with small variations like using a laptop or compared to analog sources or field recordings, or there are more musical kind of feels. I mean, I was slightly disappointed. I saw him for the first time last year at a festival in Birmingham playing with Keiji Haino, and it was relatively tranquil. And then he just got behind a drum set and played the drums while Keiji Haino bashed away at guitar. I was thinking, this is good, but it's not quite what I was after. So tragically, you get this weird thing that Mertzbo is always ahead, challenging everyone's expectations. And then you get the noise listener going, yeah, actually, I just wanted that blasting thing that I like.
Now, at the very end of your book, you talk about the difference between hearing and listening. What's the distinction?
Within sound art, John Cage has taken and Pauline Oliveros as the kind of pioneers of listening, that, you know, this is great democratization, that we should all if we're all listeners, we're all artists, and the whole world becomes artistic. And I think, right, that's good up to a certain point. But what it's also doing is conveying control to us over our environment, control over the sound environment. So to assert that listening is the most important implies that you're in a position to do the listening. And once you've done that, once you put yourself in a position, you can kind of stay in charge of it. Hearing, on the other hand, is what happens when you're more kind of subjected to music. Now, that could well be listening to popular music in a public location, one of the sort of non-spaces that we spend a lot of time in the contemporary world, or it could be some selected Japanese sound or whichever. But either way, something about it should not stop you listening, but make you alternate between listening and hearing so that you were doing something with it mentally rather than just turned into a vegetable. But, well, that would be interesting too. It kind of only would work once. It's a sort of one-way direction idea. So alternating between them, I think, is the interesting thing. And the simple answer is listening is logically processing sound, and hearing is the sound kind of being more active in its own right.
Paul Hegarty is the author of Noise Music, A History. He spoke with Steve Paulson.